Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
All right, we have another great episode for you. Before we jump into that, September 30th, are you going to be joining us for our business podcast forum? So we obviously love podcasting. We believe in the power of this to build your business. And we decided to do an entire day of teaching companies how to do exactly just that. So September 30th at our studio location here at City Central, we are having a really fun day of podcasts and sessions and food and drinks, and you got to join us.
Absolutely. It will be definitely worth your time, especially if it's going to help you grow your business.
Yay for more customers and making money.
Exactly. On that note,
we'll head over to Innovation Calling, or I'm sorry, not Innovation Calling, innovationmediaenterprises.com/event to sign up. Use the code SIA, S-Y-Y-A, for another 20% off. So let's talk about Jonathan this episode.
Yes. So we had the luxury of getting to speak with an individual who's normally in Arkansas, but was in town for us. So he actually came to our studio. So big props to Mr. Jonathan Goldberg, the CIO, Senior Vice President over at Arkansas Children's Hospital.
Yeah, I like this conversation with Jonathan because it was really about being in Arkansas in trying to drive technology. It's a harder place. It's not like you're in New York City or San Francisco where people are completely adapting to technology, but really trying to focus on healthcare and helping not just any people in the cities, but in rural areas.
Yeah.
There was so much he brought up that I never thought about before.
Well, I mean, when you think of the region, right, and it is distributed in Arkansas, there's so much different topography, actually. And just, again, like you're saying, the cultural and the community outreach, he's got a very different set of challenges. And, you know, I think and in some ways, I feel like he's not getting the credit he deserves, or that whole hospital isn't. I mean, he addresses it, the ranking. You know, Arkansas is not considered most cutting edge, but they own it.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. And they're saying, no, we're going to make a difference, and we're showing you how we're going to make a difference. And this is where I think Jonathan's taking the helm and really working with the organization. I was very impressed with.
Yeah. And like I said, just we think of emerging tech in the sense of doing all these really cool things with AR, VR, but a lot of it's just creating a better experience, so scheduling. And we overlook those simple things that can make all the difference in the world of healthcare. And so it's not just about the
bells and whistles.
Yes, the bright and shiny objects. It's about the core customer care and the fundamentals of getting your patients taken care of. So
exactly. And on that note, I think we should go ahead and welcome Mr. Jonathan Goldberg to Innovation Calling.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling.
Hey, Jonathan, welcome to our show.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know it's been a long time coming, and I appreciate your time. You are actually physically located in Arkansas, but where are you sitting currently?
It looks like I'm sitting in your offices in Dallas, Texas. I'm here for a conference, and we were able to connect the dots and allow me to show up. And I arrived here in a Dodge Ram pickup truck that Hertz rental car gave me, which they said if you're going to be in Texas, you should drive like a Texan.
I feel very out of place because I do not have a pickup truck. And Jonathan was kind to come in the rain. I'll be honest. I was a little worried because rain and Dallas do not mix well. So I'm very excited that he's here with us.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, did you get to honk at a lot of people in your big old truck?
No, I didn't. But I left early enough. There were a few accidents. I probably caught us based on the rain and rush hour traffic. There's a lot of cars on the road here.
Yeah, so Aaron, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but John is not a Southerner person.
Okay.
John is actually from New York.
Okay. Very cool.
So
Arkansas
so
had to
how's
be a big
the traffic
move?
Different? Yeah. I know we're supposed to get into an interview right now, but I just have to laugh. What do you like? What's the difference between the traffic?
Between New York and Dallas is the same, it looks like.
What about Arkansas?
Arkansas, there's really no such thing as traffic. Now, if you're from Arkansas, you may argue differently, but at this point, the the traffic is, if you see a 10-minute delay to get home, that's usually the extent unless there's a major accident.
Nice. This is the second person we've talked to from Arkansas, and
it's easier living.
It's getting more and more tempting.
So there's a lot of good things and great things going on about Arkansas. And obviously, John, you moved from New York to Arkansas. So help me understand that path a little bit. How did you end up here?
Sure. Well, everybody's career, the journey you take is not typically the one you set out in the beginning. There's many times where I'll call myself an accidental CIO. Because one is I'm not technical. That's not my background. I was really going into health administration and specifically nursing home administration. And as I was pursuing that career path out of college, there was no internet. And the way to get from college to nursing home administration is there's a 2-year internship that you have to do to become licensed as an administrator. And you have to get sponsored to do that 2-year internship. And it was really difficult. I was looking through the white pages. This is the days when I'd go to the library, I'd find all the white pages they had, and you'd start calling nursing homes. So it was fruitless, the search. So I wanted to get to work. So I went to work for the New York City Health and Hospital Corporation, which is the largest public health system in the country. Started my career, and I certainly can talk more about it down the road. It led me to ultimately the CIO career and the technical career, at least managing technology, which doesn't. And as a non-technical CIO, I was in healthcare. I was probably one of the first early on as in that sort of non-technical role, because one of the benefits that brought was the ability to understand the business just as much as understand the technology. So certainly that benefited me, and certainly that's more common now to have a non-technical CIO, because really you can hire great people to manage the technology and understand the technology, but you really need to understand the business. So people that can bridge that need are certainly well geared for that role.
So how does it work? I mean, with all of the tech, we'll talk about the state of healthcare with technology in a minute, but when you have all this technology coming at you, it's not, should you get email or not, or should you have internet? Like, there is so much out there right now in terms of what to take on, what to implement, what to look into. How do you begin to make those decisions as someone, if you have all these technical people telling you, you should do this, you should do this? I'm sure there's 100 different recommendations on stuff that maybe you can only do 3. Where do you begin to parse that out and make those decisions?
Yeah, well, I think if you go back a while, a lot of healthcare organizations have made large investments in technology, except it was very disjointed. You could have hundreds of applications running, and there was really little integration between them. And then of course that evolved into sort of more. Integrated systems or integrating independent systems. Then you got to integrated systems. The problem was because healthcare made these investments but didn't necessarily have – it was sort of, as you said, where you have all of these people and needs coming at you, so you just start buying them, right? And then all of a sudden you look back and go, I've got hundreds of applications. What do I do with them all? Am I using them? What is it costing me? Am I getting the value from those? We've gotten smarter, and of course, systems have also evolved. And right now, when we analyze technology for consumption, we'll typically look at what is it really going to bring to the table? What is the value to our customers? And from our standpoint, our customers can be our employees, our physicians, and of course our patients and families. So we look at it both sides. I mean, customers can be anybody who's using the technology.
Okay.
So just to clarify, because I think it's slightly different between states, are the physicians employees of Arkansas Children, or are they or is it just a housing or is a facility for doctors to practice?
Yeah, I mean, it can vary within a state and from state to state. It really is usually just the structure of the type of organization and how they've structured their their providers' employment. In our case, we're an academic medical center, so we're a teaching hospital, and a pretty significant teaching hospital for pediatrics. So our physicians are all employees of the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences. A lot of them went to school there, or even if they didn't, they're employed by the academic medical center, who then provides us those physicians for the use of our children.
So in a way, then, you guys have it a little bit easier because they are, I don't want to say captive audience, but if you have a application that you guys are pushing out or updating, is there an easy way to communicate across to get them trained and updated versus your other experiences where if they were not employees of the hospital, was it harder to communicate and get them on board with your technology upgrades?
Yeah, that's a great question, because one of the challenges we've had, and you may have heard that from others, is that some health systems have independent physicians. They're private practice. They have just credentials and privileges to work at the hospital. So they'll come into the hospital and do surgeries, and then they'll go back to their office. And so it's harder to communicate with them. We certainly do have a captive audience, because obviously these physicians are pretty much 100% dedicated to us. Most of them are, and then there's a few that sort of bounce between the adult world and children. So when we want to roll out new technology, a couple certain things we've learned over time is, one, engage physicians early. So don't buy something and then tell them you've bought it and you're going to start training them. Let them know early on what your thought process is, if it wasn't something they already brought to the table. But engage them in looking at the systems, talking about it, understanding it. It goes a long way in terms of having an advocate on the physician side to help you navigate those waters of implementing new technology. Because, you know, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, people like to know. No one likes surprises typically, and that could be in your personal life or in your work life. So we've learned over time by lots of missteps as an industry that engage early, talk about it, communicate well, and typically that will help smooth things and make it just ultimately a better implementation.
Do you feel, being a research and a teaching hospital, that they're more adaptive to technology, or do you still get pushback?
Yeah, no, there's still a little pushback. Yeah. You know, typically it's not so much. I think at this point people realize that technology is the underpinnings and the future of just about every business. So
yeah.
I don't think we're fighting that fight anymore. A few years back we were, where people were, you know, how come we can't just use pencil and paper? You know, this is just not. And some, you know, you had physicians retiring when the health systems decided to roll out an electronic medical record, because, you know what, I've had enough. I'm done. So, you know, it depends on the person, but certainly we've learned that technology is here to stay. And so the question is how do you make it easy for them to use it? How do you make sure that it's a tool that's useful, and that they are well prepared to use it? And it's an ongoing, this ongoing struggle of the EMR being the bane of physicians' existence. There is truth to that, because it is a lot harder to navigate the system while you're trying to take care of your patient. We're trying to make it easier as an industry, but it's still something. It's something in between you and the patient. And there's a lot of benefit, though, and that's that you don't always see that. And that's the problem, is that if the physicians who usually give pushback are the ones who are, it's a frustration that they're venting about really why it that obstacle that they're encountering. If we can make it easy for them to use, if we can try to understand the challenges and see if we can solve them, even if it's on a physician by physician basis, we'll certainly do that.
So as a leader, the CIO, I'm looking at your leadership organization. It sounds like to me, based on what you've just responded, that there's the chief medical officer, the chief nursing officer. How tight are you in communication with them? Because these EMR systems, electronic medical record systems, are there, to streamline. There's legal repercussions, right, for these applications. How closely are you working with them to ensure the right EMR system is in place, or how it's implemented is correct?
Yeah. Well, it's not, I like to say it's knowledge and numbers. And you certainly everybody brings a certain expertise, and it is critical to have those leaders at the table. I mean, our chief nursing officer represents the leadership over a good chunk of our workforce and a critical aspect of our workforce. Our chief medical officer certainly is the leader and the advocate for the physicians. Luckily, we're very fortunate to have very engaged leaders, including, you mentioned legal. I mean, our chief legal officer gets very involved in not only us, you think of the contracts, but also all of the regulatory environment that healthcare has to work under. And technology and regulatory don't always necessarily go well together. And healthcare is certainly the highest regulated industry there is, or at least one of. So we do have to spend a lot of time understanding the implications of that environment that we're under.
So what would you say in general? I know this is a very big question, but we talked a little bit how we're going to discuss the state of healthcare and technology in general. We talked a little bit about the challenges you're facing and just, being able to bring on. If you could put a very 30,000 foot view of the state of it, what would you say it is currently?
So healthcare in general?
Yeah, healthcare in general with tech. Like, where are we to where we want to go?
We've at the 30,000 foot level, we're at this stage, and it probably started maybe about a year or two ago. It depends on the maturity of the health system, but we're kind of as an industry now that and it's very applicable to the name of your podcast, which is innovation is sort of now the buzzword. And we're talking a lot about innovation. And I think what the reason we're at this point now is that there's been kind of, even though if you're in the business like I am, we've been talking about innovation health for years, but the outsiders, the tech companies from the outside saying, okay, well, the healthcare industry is a $3.3 trillion business, which is larger than the whole economy of France. I learned that there's a lot of money. And so, when there's money, certainly, those who want to make money will look at that. And so we're seeing a lot of companies, big ones and startups, really trying to kind of break into the healthcare market. And so there's a lot of innovative conversations. And I kind of maybe put into a few buckets. There's the technology that'll make it easier for our customers to do business with us. And we talked about the ease of our physicians and nurses being able to use the EMR. Are there tools and other things, technologies that'll help, like voice recognition? And at the same time, how do we make it easy for our patients to get care? That could be finding a physician, scheduling an appointment, or what about not even having to leave their home through telemedicine and virtual care? So we can do remote monitoring now. We can integrate. You're seeing, with Apple HealthKit, for example, we can connect. We have a little bit different world in the pediatrics world because we're not necessarily always talking to the patient. We're talking to their family. There's some challenges we have to deal with as it relates to connecting information. And then there's really the use of data. And the use of data can benefit lots of things. We can automate through machine learning and AI how we collect bills and how we bring revenue in. We can also look at it from a research standpoint. We're building, as an industry, we're building really large repositories of data, and we're getting better at it by the day at how we find things. And certainly operationally, if we can present information to nurses or physicians before they even think of something through machine learning and AI, then it could just make their lives a little easier too, and maybe even help prevent something that they would have missed otherwise. So, the use of data, the ease of use of the system are really probably some of the kind of the buckets that we're really focused on as it relates to innovation. And that's where a lot of these companies are really chasing.
Yeah, because I would think it would get so challenging. You've got so many moving parts with technology, right? Like you have all these different areas, and then in the care too, you've got like augmented reality, virtual reality, being able to provide better care. I can't imagine the challenges as a CIO, just figuring out where to focus and what to bring in, because it just, there's so many moving parts in a hospital setting.
Yeah, I mean, my personal opinion is, you know, it's easy to chase the shiny new things.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, while I'm sitting here, there is great healthcare being provided at our facilities as well as others.
Yeah.
With what we have. So we can take not to say there's not a huge room for improvement,
right,
and opportunities along the way, but I think you can take a cautious approach to make sure you really know what you're going to use technology for, and making sure you're partnering with the right companies. Because unfortunately, it's just the reality. You know, I applaud all these companies trying to do some really phenomenal things, but at the end of the day, I suspect, you know, they're not all going to last. So we have to be really careful, because, you know, we're not a high margin industry. And it's something where we can't necessarily afford to make too many missteps.
Yeah.
So, John, you pointed out a couple things here that really are resonating with me. And it's you in your role. It sounds to me, from a historic standpoint, tech leaders focus on tech, but you're really focusing on the business aspect, the how to service your customers or patients. What's the experience for both the patient and your employees? What's the top line, bottom line, so you're not chasing after gadgets or widgets? Are you seeing more of a business conversation in your role today with your peer group versus talking to your team about the widgets and gadgets?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's been a maturity in the role and a maturity in the needs of organizations. And, you know, nowadays, now that you're buying software, a few years back, we were developing software, buying some, developing others. But yeah, I mean, you the only way you're going to understand what technology you need to buy and optimize what you have is to understand the needs of the organization. So if leaders don't understand that, then you're sort of already behind the curve and handicapped a little bit to be able to provide. And I think that's where we've seen turnover in lots of leadership roles, not just the technology, you know, CIO role, but you have seen changes in the CIO role. Typically, turnover happens when folks can't necessarily understand and see the vision and the strategy of an organization, and they're more focused on technology. That hasn't really boded well for them in recent years.
So what would you say Arkansas Children's vision is currently? We've talked about the state of healthcare in general, but for you, what is your vision currently and your goals as the CIO?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you know, Arkansas Children's certainly is committed to the, and really is the only pediatric hospital. We have two hospitals, one in Northwest Arkansas and one in Little Rock. We're committed to statewide care and making children healthier. And we really live to that mission. But we can't build buildings across the state. We have buildings in certain parts of the state, whether it be clinics or mobile dental vans or the hospitals themselves. There's a lot of rural areas of the state where buildings and bricks and mortar aren't going to work. So, you know, our goal is looking at, okay, well, what are the needs across the state? Where are the gaps? And what do we need to do to fill them? So we're doing school-based telemedicine in certain school districts where we've been testing the thought process of, well, if you can keep a kid in school, and you're interacting with the school nurse and a physician from Arkansas Children's, if you can keep them in school, then the parent can stay at work because they don't have to come pick them up. Mm-hmm. And so you start to not only address the direct health problem of the child, but all of the other indirect issues that come from having a child who's ill. So, you know, there's benefits there. We do clinic telemedicine, clinic to clinic, so we can provide in remote areas, access to specialists instead of a specialist having to travel or a patient having to travel to us. So there's a lot. We want to move to direct-to-consumer telemedicine. That is, I mean, certainly virtual care is going to be a big part, I think, in the future. I mean, it's already sort of there across the country. The uptick, though, is somewhat limited. You're finding it, you know, sort of those quick urgent care visits. My ear hurts, my throat hurts, and those are great use cases. But I think we want to continue to kind of become more advanced in that realm. So you know, our goal is to use every tool possible to try to figure out ways to keep kids healthy, to get care where they need it in the most convenient way, and certainly at the lowest cost, highest quality.
So we're looking at the way you take care of your clients, I guess, patients.
Patients, customers.
Yeah, I don't know if customer seems like such an odd word to use when we're talking about healthcare, but Arkansas does have its own unique challenges. There are rural locations where maybe the internet is not as stellar as maybe a metropolitan location.
True.
So because of your unique challenges, do you find yourself, you can't be dropping off cutting edge technologies if there isn't a way to be able to implement it, right? Yeah. Is there an adoption harder because of the logistics of Arkansas, or is it the cultural aspect of it where people just don't want to use certain technologies?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question, because it is something that we've been talking about on both fronts. One is, you have the aspect of you know, Southeast Arkansas is basically farmland, and the question of how much connectivity is there. It's there, not great. We've actually had conversations with the Verizon and Sprint to say, hey, an AT&T, you know, anything you can do in preparation for our needs, anything you can do to help us make sure that the coverage there is adequate, we would certainly appreciate it. And they're usually pretty responsive, because, I mean, one is they also, as much as they can aggravate us from a customer standpoint, they're usually pretty good at responding to needs, especially if it relates to healthcare and sort of the mission. So they do have a little bit of a charitable part of their business. The other piece is that we talk about the types of people that live in the state and what their appetite and ability, competency to adopt technology is. And we have our population is about 63% or so Medicaid. And there's this ongoing debate across the country. Well, there's a sort of the assumption, well, those type of people, they're not going to adopt technology. There's actually a study a couple years ago that I don't know if at least Deloitte published it. I don't know if they were the originator, but I'm going to assume they were, where they looked at that and they saw that there was really no difference in the adoption of technology between a commercially insured patient and a Medicaid patient. Now, of course, that could differ if you're in the city versus on a farm, but nowadays, phones have become a computer, the light, you know, the communication tool for so many people. And so even the people in the most rural areas probably rely on technology for things that they need, whatever those may be. I think we sort of make quick judgments to think what people do and don't do. But I think we'd find ourselves proven wrong.
I was just going to say I know, I don't want to use the term poor, but the Medicaid, they have cell phones. Yes. And they're going to use those. They're going to make sure they have a cell phone above all other things, of all essential needs. So I know that's a very general statement, but majority of, even just in the previous work I've done in cell phone services and stuff, they have nice cell phones. Right. They have cell phones no matter what. Go ahead, C. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. No, what I was going to say was, because this is actually in reference to a recent roundtable that Aaron and I did about generations. Because you're focused on pediatrics, I was going to argue, are you seeing the opposite? A big push for you rolling out emerging technologies because the parents of these children are younger.
Yeah, I know, and that's a great point. I mean, obviously, we're not dealing with elderly or the aging. We're really dealing, unless, you know, maybe there's a couple grandparents that have custody of kids or are involved in the care. But we do feel that obviously the parents of our patients do want to use technology, and a lot of them do want to stay plugged into what care is happening. And just like, and that is part of the philosophy that we're, that healthcare is going after, which is you want people to be a partner in their care. When we were on paper, where we didn't have all the technology available to make your information available, readily available on your phone, all of your medical record information, your lab results, and it was harder for you. There was a wall, right? There was a barrier, because if you ever wanted to see information, you had to fax a request to the medical records department, and all of a sudden you'd get a giant envelope in the mail with a stack of paper that was, you know, 3 inches thick, and you couldn't read half of it anyway. So, you know, the advent over the years of the electronic medical record, the sophistication we have now of figuring out how to present it easily, the information, or at least a little bit more digestible, and presenting it through apps on phones, you can be plugged into information. As a matter of fact, the conversations we always have nowadays is, how fast do we push information out to someone's phone? And when I say push, you still have to log into, but if you're going to log into your, you know, the ArcSight Children's application to look at your medical record, how fast the lab results show up. And, you know, there's this debate, well, if we send them instantly, then that means the patients may see a bad lab result before the physician's able to talk to them. Mm-hmm. And there's this nervousness. What does that mean? You may see a diagnosis or something that is negative, which may be not well received by the family. And so you try to figure those things out, and there's different of opinions. Physicians get nervous about having patients having patients who have information before them. But I think they're thinking about the worst case, which is human. I mean, that's understandable. And then some of us are saying, let's do it. Let's get the information to them, and let's figure out how to work through those issues in terms of how we process communication. So if we have if there's critical results that don't look good, let's make sure we notify the physician quickly, so that even though it's in the record for patients to see, physician can take action quickly. So there's things we can do differently, not just say, well, let's not do it.
Yeah. Well, can we go more into the telemedicine side? Because I'm just thinking of all the different ways to utilize this tool. Another great one is sending records quickly, like instead of waiting for that phone call from your doctor to know everything's okay and it's weak, you know what I mean?
Or no phone call.
Yeah, or no phone call. But what are the gaps? Because I look at it like, okay, well, it's pretty straightforward, the basic stuff. I don't feel good. I got an earache, you know, and it seems like we could implement those easily now. Mm-hmm. Where are we to where you want to be, especially since this is a big initiative for, you know, on an Arkansas basis of being able to do this? Because I would think even being able to keep people out of hospitals or medical centers is a good thing if they don't have to be in there, right?
Right.
So where do you think we are on that perspective versus where you want to go? And where's that gap in getting there?
Well, as an industry, I think it varies.
Yeah.
You know, based on the health systems and where they are in the and where the state will, you know, certain states, and Arkansas being one of them, has been slow at the uptake to reimburse.
Okay.
For telemedicine. So there's a large cost for infrastructure. So we've been taking a cautious approach. So, you know, there is some of that. At the same time, you know, so we're early, and I think even for places that have invested, I think there's probably a few exceptions along the way, but I think there's a lot of room for growth, and I think there are some organizations, not a lot, and I'm going to say I probably can count them on one hand, who are toying with what you would call the hospital at home. Mm-hmm. So if you have low acuity patients who really just need to be in a bed, they could be in their own bed,
right,
and they could be monitored remotely, and you know we could even have a physician who can look at them remotely. So you can monitor them, maybe even if you need to send a nurse every couple days or even a physician every couple days to just check in physically, you could do that. But think about the cost reduction, the quality of life, that you could get by doing that. So there's really no gaps in technology that wouldn't allow us to do it. It's just the implications of almost redesigning healthcare to function. It's part of your organization to function that way. But that, I mean, I think that is part of the future is to be able to, it's connecting the, you know, you think of telemedicine right now as I'm looking at you. If you're not, you know, maybe it was, first it was talking to you. Now I'm actually looking at you, but you start to tie all the monitoring, and there's some really cool things going on around sophisticated monitoring that doesn't have all the wires and the contraptions that you think of in a hospital setting. As those become more sophisticated, it becomes a lot easier to monitor through with Bluetooth connectivity or Wi-Fi connectivity, and then that data be flowing into the EHR, which then allows the EHR to alert caregivers to things that are going on in the patient's.
Do you have any issues with like malpractice insurance insuring telemedicine? Like, are they more cautious because you're technically not seeing everything, or are practices like that on board with this? Like, do you have any?
That's a very forward-looking question, and one that I don't necessarily have the answer to.
Okay.
All I can say is it hasn't come up.
Okay.
Because I think you're insuring you're typically insuring for the practice of medicine how you do it. You're liable whatever way you do it. So. But it is an interesting question of, as you get more advanced, are there implications to how you're providing care and what could cause liability?
Yeah.
What would a bad Wi-Fi lost Wi-Fi connection mean if you're caring for someone at home and it requires Wi-Fi monitoring?
Right.
So, great question.
So with telemedicine, that itself is an emerging technology. You've mentioned a lot of other things that sounds like to me you guys – are going through a digital transformation. I hate using that buzzword.
it's here to stay for a little while until we come up with something different.
Exactly. So you have to automate this. You have to have an analytics engine somewhere to manage all this data that's going through, particularly with something like telemedicine or just operationally with EMR, et cetera. So you have to play in this emerging technology world, how much of it is really getting adapted within healthcare? Or are they just buzzwords still at this point?
No, I think people are definitely making investments. I think you're, again, it really is the maturity of the health system and what they're finding important for them at a certain point, at a certain time. So, for example, for us, we're working with a company to integrate some of the alarm monitoring that, when you go into a room, you see the patient monitor and it's taking vital signs and it's generating alarm data. Right now, that just sort of sends a message to nurses to say, hey, there's, if you're sitting at the nurse's station, there's something, maybe you'll hear it, you'll start hearing it beeping. But what if we can push all of that data into our EMR so that the physicians and nurses and other caregivers can see that data, see it trending, and be alerted to it and wherever they are. And so we're working on something like that now where it's embedded in it's not a separate application. It'll actually be embedded into our electronic medical record. We've partnered with a company that's doing artificial intelligence in the radiology field, specifically with X-ray. So we're actually getting it, have some type of sort of business relationship. So we'll have a vested interest in really understanding where that's going. It's sort of dipping our toe in the water, I'd like to think. And what they're doing is basically taking machine learning and artificial intelligence and really making it easier for physicians, radiologists specifically in this case, to see things in images that the human eye may not as easily be able to see. And so if you're a high volume radiologist and the system can support you, it's not, and that's one of the things we always be clear. It's that system would never replace a physician. It really is about supporting to say, well, if this can highlight things for me, present it and let me validate, I can move a lot quicker. And the more confidence I have in the system means I can continue to move through review of images and a lot faster. Because typically, I don't know, I can't speak to a percentage, but the number of normal images is a lot greater than abnormal. So if you can get those normals off the table quickly, you can focus on the things that need more focusing on.
So I just got excited because you said artificial intelligence. Hashtag that, Aaron.
Yes, of course. Got a new hashtag.
It's an ongoing joke we have. But you are a teaching hospital and you're talking about AI. What about the other area, which is augmented reality and virtual reality to train your doctors? Are you guys responsible for implementing that, driving that? Is that something that, you know, the chief medical officer would bring to your attention? Are you guys even doing anything down that path right now?
Yeah, there's a couple things that we've done. Actually, we're lucky to have at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock. Their main campus is in Fayetteville, but there is the University of Arkansas in Little Rock is a pretty decent sized school in itself. They actually have some pretty prominent virtual reality, I'm going to say, professors who have been in the business for, you know, before we even knew what virtual reality was. And we've talked to them, and we have, and also the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences, which is really the academic medical center and where they're teaching the medical school. We both talked to them about different opportunities and things that we could be doing from a development standpoint, both from a teaching standpoint, you know, the walk through the body type things. And there are companies also that have commercialized some of that. We've also looked at wayfinding. Where, you know, can we use virtual reality to help people through certain miles posts, so to speak, in the hospital, figure out where they're going. But we had them do a walkthrough. We were toying with different ideas. You know, I guess that's what innovation is. Think of an idea, right, and see if it has some stickiness. We were challenged with a few things, so we never pursued it, but I think it has a place. We haven't really gotten too far with it. We are doing things like 3D printing, and we've actually operationalized that in our heart surgery program. So they're actually printing child's hearts, which they image it. They actually can explain to the patient and family what they're going to do with the actual child's heart by looking at it and seeing it and touching it.
Wow.
Yeah. So some neat things going on, you know, both here and elsewhere.
So what would you say in a generalist, you know, we talked about telemedicine, we talked a few about the challenges upcoming. Anything else on your plate of the future for Arkansas Children's and challenges you see that you're working to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still, I mean, the most immediate thing we're working on, which is, I mean, kind of became a little bit more, again, another buzzword, which is we call our digital front door. And that is, and I talked about it before, which is really how do we let's address some of the simple things like how does if someone moves to Little Rock or Fayetteville, how do they find a physician? How do they schedule an appointment without actually having to make phone calls? How do they figure out where they need to go? So if we can start provide, we have some of those tools already. So for example, we can. If a patient schedules an appointment and they're willing to, and they say, you know what, if you have another time that comes up earlier, let me know. So what we're doing is we call it fast pass, and that what that enables you to do is if someone cancels an appointment, it text messages people to say, first person to click this link with this open appointment, just click this link and accept it. First person that does obviously gets it. So we don't blast it out to a ton of people. We start with a few and then kind of, but it keeps physician schedules full, which is important because for practices that have long waiting times to get an appointment, you don't want to waste an appointment or two or three or four in a day when they could be seeing people. So tools like that that make us more efficient. Are satisfiers for the patient, are the things that we're really going after right now, and then certainly from an innovation standpoint, we kicked off our genomics project a couple months ago, and we'll be working on that over the next year. We already have the equipment to do gene sequencing, but what we're going to do is now operationalize it. So if we can sequence patients that are in the NICU for both things that are observed and things that aren't observed, we can definitely create quicker interventions to things that could be really life altering for our patients. So those are some of the things that we're working on right now, and you know, I think who knows where the future will take us. But if I want to sound really important, I'll say blockchain.
Right? Yeah, I just say yeah. You're implementing some blockchain.
Everything, I'm doing and everything. AI. Everything's going to be blockchain.
Yeah, that'll work. It'll make you sound like you guys are way above the pack. last questions you want to ask too?
Yeah, no, John. Thank you so much for your time. You did pique my interest right there with saying genomics. That's something that a field that we don't necessarily hear as much about in terms of healthcare and innovation. So thanks for mentioning it. And I'm glad to hear that you guys kicked off that project. I'm intrigued to see what you guys are doing next with it.
Yeah. And that enables us to connect both. The nice thing about genomics is it actually allows you to connect our research institute to be able to start collecting and looking at genomics data with actual patient impact, because typically research, you know, the research arm and the operations are typically, you know, somewhat separate. Once in a while they come together, and this is an opportunity where they do come together to say, not only can we study, but we can also have a potentially immediate impact to the patient. So to marry those two is pretty cool.
Such a vast, like, you think of technology, it's just so intriguing to me, because you think of technology, you think of like the cool care, cool research, but then it's like, how do we make the patient experience better too? How do they come in and schedule easy? Like I keep saying, there's just such a vast, you're dealing with so many spinning plates of healthcare, you know?
Right. And what we like to say is, you know, you go into a target, any target you go into pretty much is the same. It's one business. Under the hospital umbrella, we like to say that, you know, there's 70 different businesses, because and the needs of each one are very, very different. So, and that's some of the reason why historically we had so many systems, because there was never one that can solve everything. We run hundreds of systems, so as a business, we are much more complicated, and hence that's been one of the challenges, where a bank or a retail can really live on one or two systems to manage their business.
Yeah. See, any last questions?
Don't have any more questions for you, John. Thank you so much for your time. It shows the passion that you have for Arkansas Children's. And if I had children, I'd be excited to get healthcare from you guys if I lived in Arkansas. But thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, because I think it's, and I'll just say this as a side, you know, being a parent, I would never think to go to Children's to find a physician. I always think of Children's when something is direly wrong with my child. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and just that in-between thing, I would never have put that together, that I should use them as a resource or use them even if it's not a big broken leg, or you know what I mean? Something like that. It's just very intriguing to me that it's so much more than just a hospital.
Yeah. I mean, we absolutely want to take care of patients from the beginning to end, in terms of their needs. So from the simplest things to the obviously the most complex.
Yeah. Well, I love it. Well, thank you so much for doing this today. Yeah. I appreciate it. I've learned a ton. So interesting. I know you have a very complicated path ahead, because, I mean, it just feels like technology is moving at such a rate that no one can truly keep up with, and you have to attempt to. So thank you so much today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks. Great.
So, Jonathan, one last thing is, if anyone wants to get a hold of you or learn a little bit more about Children's Arkansas Children's Hospital, how could they reach you? Would LinkedIn be the preferred route?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. CIO. But I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I try to, since that gets me a little bigger audience as needed.
All right. So we'll link those on our notes page over at innovationcalling.com.
Great.
John, thank you so much for your time. And it sounds like that's another episode of Innovation Calling.